You're listening to Home Business Profits with Ray Higdon, where Ray shares tips and strategies for how to become a top earner in your company. Let's get into the episode.
Hey, 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 what is up? What's happening? Ray Higdon here. And today will be a little change of pace. It'll be a little different than my normal interview or my normal contribution to social media. It'd be a little different, but it's something that I think is very important to talk about. And it's also touching on something that was very impactful to my life. And I wanted to let you in on some of this goodness. My guest today, he has a PhD in philosophy. He's the Senior Fellow and Chief Philosophy Officer at the Ayn Rand Institute. He's a contributing author to many books on Rand's ideas and philosophy, and he's a senior editor of the journal New Ideal. He's been featured on Huffington Post, CNN.com, Fox News, Business Week. He's been on NPR, BBC Radio, CNBC, Fox News Channel, the CBS Evening News. He's been all over the place. He's been recognized in a lot of areas. We're actually very, very blessed to have him. Please help me welcome Dr. Ankar Gatte. Dr. Gatte, how are you?
Good. Hi, Ray. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being on here. And so, man, where do we start here? So I guess I like to start with, how did you stumble upon and when did you stumble upon Ayn Rand's work? And then the follow-up question is, why? Obviously it spoke to you. Why?
Yeah, it made a big impact on me. And it's the same book that you said made a big impact on you, Atlas Shrugged. That was the first Ayn Rand book that I read. I was in high school still. And wow. I was just starting to get interested in philosophy in high school. And I started reading a few things.
And you were still in Canada?
Yeah. So all my schooling is in Canada. And I came to the U.S. after all my schooling. And I started reading a few philosophy things, and my older brother had read Atlas Shrugged and said, well, if you're interested in this kind of thing, you should read this book. So I read the book, and it made a huge impact on me. I'd never encountered these ideas and the Ayn Rand's passion and very different take on the world, on what's important in the world and what's good and what's bad. And it just started me really then thinking deeply about philosophical issues. And I came to think, yeah, she's right about a lot of things. And that's how I ended up at the Ayn Rand Institute.
Yeah. You know, for me, it was interesting. I read it. My father-in-law recommended it to me. And I really look up to him, admire him. He's done a lot of great things. And he told me about it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to read it. And this was, I want to say it was, I think it was 2010, not that long ago. Uh-huh. And so, you know, I've never been like a speed reader or anything like that, but I start reading it and it's actually the only book I ever read on a Nook. Because someone had given me a Nook and then I like broke it or something. So it's the only book I ever read. So it was 4,000 pages on this little Nook. Okay. And I start reading it and it was like thoughts that I had had, but I just didn't have the words for. Mm-hmm. Like there were, like I would read a sentence and I'm like, oh my God, like I've tried to think that line, but I didn't have the vocabulary for it. And she would just lay it right out there. And it just blew my mind. I read it in 4 days. So I just couldn't put it down. And my wife's like, what are you doing? And I'm just like consumed. I'm like, you know, like as a video game or something, right? You know, some people spend, you know, 100 hours on the video game. I'm just like, I couldn't stop it. So 4 days, I finished it. It was absolutely amazing. And so there's a lot of controversy. Like I'm kind of the book is Atlas Shrugged. Please, this is my take. Maybe you differ. Please do not say you watched the movie and think that's the same as reading the book, because it is not. It is not. Please.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I probably have a stronger negative reaction.
Oh, and so, in fact, there was one scene that I was literally furious about. I'm sure you caught it, where Reardon asked for a discount I'm like, no, why did they put that in there? It like really, I was so mad. Yeah. And anyway, and so
yeah, I tell people pick up the book, and they're often intimidated by how long it is. Yeah. And I say, like, just start like 80, 100 pages. And if you don't get hooked, maybe it's not for you. But if you get hooked, then it's, yeah, I read it, I think, in 3-4 days as well. So
that's a great approach, because I've recommended it to a bunch of people and they're like, dude, like, they hurt their back lifting it. And that's a great approach. Just read the first 80 pages, because there's no way I would have stopped. No way. And for those on here, I will tell you, it is one of my favorite books. It's also one of Eric Worre's favorite books. So for those of you who know Eric, like him and I have had conversations about this. And it's one of his favorite books as well. And so let me ask you this. And I was looking to see if we would get any, but she's a controversial figure. And, you know, you'll find that most people feel very strongly about her one way or another. Right. And I've found that a lot of people that think very negatively about her never actually read her stuff. And so that says something in and of itself, right? If someone has such a strong opinion of you, but they don't even know you, like, that's interesting too. I know my take, but what's your take on why is she such a polarizing, you know, figure? Why does she have such fervent fans, but also such like, ooh, I hate that lady?
Well, she sees the world in black and white. She thinks there are grays, but even when you have something that's gray, you have to kind of resolve it into what's the black elements and what's the white elements that's making it gray. So she sees the world in terms of black and white. And often what she thinks of as black, other people think of as white. And what she thinks of as white, other people think as black. And Atlas Shrugged is the prime example of this. I mean, what other book do you know that celebrates the world of business people, entrepreneurs, and celebrates them not just as like on an economic level, but that what they do is morally good and they should be championed as moral heroes for pushing the world and human life forward. Now that is like, when I read that, I was not anti-business, but it certainly made me much more pro-business than I was. And if you think in contrast to what dominates in the culture today, it's interesting to do this for about a week. If you're just whatever programs on TV and your streaming that you watch, just make a record of how often a business person is cast as an evil character.
Oh yeah.
And they don't have to explain. It's basically, well, he's in the world of business and he's after profits. And particularly if it's big business, like if he's a CEO of a drug company, oil company or something, like, they'll paint him as he's a villain. Often he commits murders. Like, how many CEOs of these companies, you know, who commit? And that's just taken for granted as, I don't have to explain this. Everybody knows it. And Ayn Rand, it wasn't just that she doesn't know it. She thinks like that's all wrong. And so that's the sense in which that's like one example of how polarizing a figure, in the sense of she sees it in black and white and she says, no, you're wrong. But like, businessmen aren't villains in the way that you have been taught to think. They're actually our heroes if you understand what they do and the contributions they make to human life and prosperity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually really rare to find a affluent business person in a movie that isn't the villain. And I remember I was, you know, I don't know why, but sometimes I slip and I watch dumb movies, but I was watching a movie. I think it was The Meg. It's a, you know, just a science fiction thing. And they had this business guy. I forget the actor. I can't remember, but he had funded the research that they were doing at this facility. And so I'm watching, I'm kind of waiting, like, okay, when does he become the villain? And I'm like, it was getting kind of late in the movie. And then there it was, you know, then he became the villain. I'm like, there it is. But it's just like, so, you know, accepted. And if you even argue against it, it's like, you're arguing, you know, against inequality and you're arguing for the fat cats and you're arguing for, you know, slave labor. Like there's just so much stuff that defending, you know, like businesses just, you know, there's like a point, right? It's like, oh, it's okay if it's small local.
Yes.
It's okay. Let's support local. But uh-oh, they're a little bigger. They got two locations. Where are they? In two different cities? Bad, right? Like at what point? I don't know what point society says that's bad.
Yeah, I mean, what that really reveals, I think, is that the hostility or the animus is profit, that everybody's suspicious of making profit. So if it's a mom and pop restaurant, yeah, okay, maybe they make a little bit of profit, but basically, like, they pay themselves and their the employees, and yeah, you've got to do that. But when you start getting big, it means you're making real profits. You can expand. You're an Apple. You're a Google. And then it's, oh no, there's something really wrong with that. And one of the things Ayn Rand gets you to think about is, and to rethink, is like, why do we think profit is bad? When profit's earned, isn't it a result of win-win relationships and win-win transactions? Like, isn't real trade, I want an iPhone and Apple wants to sell it to me and we're both better off after the transaction than before the transaction? Like, and so it's not just, it's profit's not as bad as you think it is. It's profit's good. And you, as an individual, like if you're trying to make as much money as you can in work that you love, and a business should be trying to do that. And we should want Google and Apple and so on to succeed. Because it means they're offering us and selling us products that we really, really, really want.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw interesting the other day, because it's just now it's so everywhere. Inc. of all places, Inc. made an article on their site, and it's like, you know, Starbucks going against their origin, people are mad. And so, you know, I didn't know, right? And so I read the article, and it's like they're coming up with more efficient machines, and they're gonna, you know, and they're gonna.
I read that article too. Yeah.
How dare they? Their shareholders must be so angry, and it's just so strange.
Yeah. And think of it, the customer. I mean, if they get more efficient machines and they can make the orders faster and so on, like that's great from a customer's perspective too.
Yeah. I did read, I thought it was so good. America, I'm trying to remember the name, America's Persecuted Minority. Another person I turned on to Rand is, Russell Brunson. And so he read it, he, you know, like me, he was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, you know, there's some people really catching on to her work so many years later. And it was written in what, 58, I think?
57.
So if you read it, it's like, this was written today. Like she literally had headlines in there, and you're like, that's the exact headline, like word for word.
That's the kind of the philosophic level. Philosophic issues should be timeless. Like they pertain to everybody at all time. And she's going into some fundamental issues about how we think, for instance, about profit, about should you be pursuing your self-interest and your happiness. And those are perennial issues. So you can read it, 60, 70 years later, and it still resonates.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say something about the America's Persecuted Minority, Big Business, that essay that you're referring to. That's in her book, Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal. I find the title very interesting. And again, it if you pause to think about it, I think, there's something very perceptive in what she's saying. She's treating like a persecuted minority. And again, if you go back to TV and movies and so on, if you did to businessmen, what they do to businessmen, to any other group, if it's when you have a black character, they're a villain, or it's a woman, or a Jew, or a Christian, it would be, that's a stereotype, that's really bad, you can't do this. But you can do it for businessmen, and basically only Ayn Rand is outraged by it and will say, like, this is outrageous treatment of these people. And that really tells you how deep it runs, that there's this suspicion and animosity towards business and profit and self-interest.
Have you thought about, this is just a random thought. This could go in bad places possibly, but have you ever thought about, like, what's like the source? Like, you know, to me, like with what's going on in the world in the last couple of years, it became, at least to me, this is just my take. It became apparent that a lot of media is not true. And a lot of it is just political nonsense and, you know, has an agenda and whatever else, which makes me think, okay, has it been that communication as a whole has been dictated by either politicians or religious leaders forever? Are they the ones that came up with this concept of bash big business? Because if they make a lot of money, they could challenge our reign. Like, have you ever thought about
that? Yeah, I think it runs deeper than that, in that we're taught in various kinds of ways. And you brought up religious leaders. That's one place. But I think in our schooling, the culture at large, we're taught that there's something wrong with pursuing your self-interest, that you're supposed to be selfless, L-E-S-S, like without a self. You're supposed to be thinking about the other person, not yourself. And the more people think that that's, or at least if you're going to be moral, if you're going to do what's right, that's how you should be acting, then it's, of all the professions, the most obviously self-interested, because it's so governed by profit. And it, like, you have to figure out, are you making a profit, and that you go out of business if you're not, and you expand if you're making more and more profits. It's so obvious that businesses and CEOs and so shareholders are after profit. So it's kind of out in the open, naked, out in the open, that we're about self-interest, and we're about, this is a part of our pursuit of happiness. And if we're taught to be suspicious of that, particularly like morally, well, no, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be like a doctor, and they paint the doctor as he gives up his time every evening. He gets called out to the hospital or to emergency. He's helping other people. And it's all painted like he's selfless. It's not about his own interest. And when you start to think of a doctor as, yeah, no, but a lot of doctors make a lot of money, and they want to make money, and they open practices. And then people start to get, oh, yeah, well, maybe there's something wrong with that, and maybe there's something wrong with what they're doing. I mean, look at what happened to some of the pharmaceutical companies in this pandemic. I mean, they developed vaccines in lightning-like time.
Yeah.
And they're often criticized as, like, how can you make profit about this? You should give it away. You should give your patent away. Even though they've made, I mean, literally millions of lives better. And yet, because they're also profiting, they haven't sacrificed in order to do that. Like, they've made money, and the people who are getting the vaccine are way better off. People view it as, no, there's something morally wrong about that. And until we change that.
Yeah. On that particular issue, there's definitely debate, right? Some, you know, there's definitely debate within the vaccine, you know, thoughts. It's interesting, you know, like we were just in Italy, and I went, you know, you got to go to the Vatican, right? So I go to the Vatican and walk into St. Peter's, and I'm just like, oh my, like, I was like, holy cow, this is crazy. And I mean, I'm Ayn Rand, you know, fan and everything. And I felt a little icky. I'll be honest. It's like, you know, I don't know. I felt icky because it was so much wealth. I mean, probably trillions of dollars. I mean, who knows, like all these different things. But I don't know. So I have some issue there.
I think there's a big difference between the people, and this is the way Ayn Rand put it, people who are money makers and people who are money accumulators, or even worse, looters. Mm-hmm. And when yeah. you see the wealth of the Catholic Church, one of the things I think you have to think about is this really the product of making real values for people, or is there a real element of exploitation here? Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, when you look through the history of the church, there's a lot of exploitation. It's not a win-win yeah. relationship. Because I don't have the same view if I go into some new skyscraper that's been built in New yeah. York or somewhere in Asia and think, and yeah. like that's a lot of wealth there. Yeah. But I don't yeah. have the view. It doesn't feel icky because Got it's it. People yeah. who made this same. Money and they're building something.
Yeah, same. Same. And I know we're in so many controversial areas right now. Yeah, same for sure. You know, like the attacks on Elon, and I look at Elon, I drive a Tesla. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with everything he says and does, right. but I don't see how you couldn't agree that he hasn't added value to this planet at a major, major level. And the same with Jeff Bezos. I mean, mm-hmm. to me, you know, he does kind of look like a villain like nowadays, but appearances aside, you know, 30 years ago, if you told someone, hey, you'll be able to order something, it'll be at your house like the next day, no matter what you order, whether it's a unicorn eraser or it's a bicycle pump or it's a, you'd be like, yeah, sure. How are they going to do that? Magic.
Yeah.
Right. And so like those two guys, I know, get attacked a lot. Mm-hmm. Jeff, I think less because he's more friendly and has purchased media. Mm-hmm. Elon more because people at least see him more as maybe conservative or whatever. But like, what's your observations around yeah. those guys?
It's I think both of them at their best are admirable. And one should think like they've created these enormous things. And as you said, like they created things that people thought would have been impossible to create. Yeah. And if you take Amazon, it's hard to imagine life before Amazon. I was just this morning, because I needed a part for something that I know pre-Amazon, it would have been like 2 weeks trying to hunt down, going to different stores. Like, have they yeah. even heard of this part, let alone do they have it in stock and so on? And Amazon, you could put in a search and 8 different options pop up in 30 seconds or less than 30 seconds. And then it's at your door the next day. And just how much that adds to your life, how simpler yeah. it gets, how many things you can do that you would just, you might have thrown it away or I'll never buy this because we'll never get parts yeah. for it. So, and that's just one of example of all kinds of things that Amazon has added. And yeah. I think it's also part of what makes it harder for people to attack Amazon, because it's too obvious to too many people that, yeah, this has added some real value to my life. So there's something weird about now I'm going to denounce Amazon for everything and Jeff Bezos, yet I use it every day and it's made my life better. Like there's something, a normal yeah. good person. Well, there's something that doesn't jive. Okay. That's what I'm doing.
I remember when there were, you know, the riots going on and stuff. I saw it several places, but I saw an article where people had built a guillotine outside of his house, yeah. like that he should, you know, be killed, but they had ordered the parts from Amazon. So I just yeah. thought that was like really
yeah. Yeah.
funny.
And a normal person wouldn't do that. Like they wouldn't, yeah. they would know like, yeah, this is contradictory. This doesn't make any, yeah. this can't be right.
Yeah.
But well, unfortunately cool. There is that kind of animus. So yeah, he certainly has detractors, and particularly when he became the wealthiest man, I forget where he ranks now, but at a point sure. where it's, and you say that you saw the same with Bill Gates, that he became hated when he became he was at the top of the business world. And it's easy for people to paint them as exploiters. Yet if you think about it for 5 minutes, you'll get, well, Amazon hasn't exploited me. Like it's made my yeah. life better, not worse. And same with Microsoft.
I've gotten negative feedback if I defend any of these guys, but it's usually like, he was friends with Epstein or he was this and that. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking right. about them. I don't know that. I don't know them. Right. But I'm saying their contribution to my well-being and whatever. They may be a total jerk, right? As a person, I'm saying their ideas, the, you know, what they put forward really changed.
Yeah. And yeah, that's what I think of it as, like, at their best and what they're known for publicly. I mean, Gates, I mean, now he's known for his philanthropy, but he was known for, he's the person who created and directed Microsoft. Bezos is the person who founded and directed Amazon and took it from nothing to this enormous company. And that's what they're known for. And it's in that capacity that one thinks that this is really an achievement and accomplishment that one should admire, not try to tear down. But it, yeah, they might not always live up to the best of themselves. And that's a failing, but it doesn't detract from the, it doesn't erase the actual achievement.
Yeah. My friend Anand asks, what's your heritage, if you don't mind sharing?
I'm, so as we said, I was born in Canada, raised in Canada, but I'm, my parents are, one is from India and one's from Germany. So it's a,
got it. Cool. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. All right. So if someone wants to, like, I'm positive majority of people on here have not been exposed to Ayn Rand, have not read Atlas Shrugged. Where would be a good place to start, or what would you suggest? Are there free resources, or what would you suggest if someone wanted to continue this kind of conversation on their own?
Yeah, so it's, one avenue is the fiction. We talked a little bit about Atlas Shrugged, and particularly if you're one's interested in the world of business and so on, I think that's the place to start. And again, it's a long book, it's 1,000+ pages in the paperback, but start 50, 80 pages. And if you don't find, like, you want to keep going, then stop.
That's such good advice. I mean, that's read the first 50, 80 pages. And if, you know, if it's not for you, it's not for you. Just put it down. I want to show you something. I went through a period of my life where I was kind of decluttering and getting, you know, I just got rid of a lot of stuff. I got rid of all kinds of collectibles and, you know, just stuff. I'm like, I don't need this stuff. I think this is the only, like, collectible I still have, which is the first edition.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, so it's a, you know, it's, I think it's a pretty good shape. It's a, you know, first edition. It's, it was just such a meaningful book to me. This is one I held on to. I could have easily sold. But I held on to that. And so suggestion number one is, if you're into business, which a lot of mine, you know, are, you know, and then get Atlas Shrugged, read the first 70, you know, 50, 80 pages, you'll know if it's a fit or not.
Yeah. And then, the Fountainhead. So the, her two, like, best sellers were the Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Fountainhead comes before Atlas Shrugged. That's a more intimate story. It's about an architect. It has an artistic element to the story for that. It gets an architect fighting for his sort of artistic vision of architecture. So for people who, there's some people, like, Atlas Shrugged's a much bigger story. It's like at a world scale, and the Fountainhead's more intimate. So for someone who likes, like, that's what I like more, get kind of more individual character and that kind of story, and has this artistic element, then I tell people, yeah, start with the Fountainhead then. And again, if the first two chapters you don't get hooked, there's a great scene between the main character when this isn't really a plot spoiler because it happens right at the start. He gets kicked out of school, and it's a very interesting scene. And if you don't get hooked and I want to read more, then you put it down. But so those, if someone likes reading fiction, so that's a great avenue into Ayn Rand. If you are more interested in the nonfiction of some of what she had to say, well, one, you can find a lot of essays up on our website. It's aynrand.org. And if you go to, it's the campus tab up near the top. That has, so that you can read stuff for free, but you can pick up one of her books. And again, if interested in business and so on, she has a book, Capitalism, The Unknown Ideal. And it talks about capitalism, but it has a lot to say about business, the business world, what real production looks like in the business world, why it should be admired. So that's a great, if someone likes more reading, and it's essays, so it's, you can, there's not the issue of the length of hundreds and hundreds of pages. You can read a 10-page essay in there, and yeah. You can sample again. So that's a good thing to pick up.
So I think most people, you know, they've been told to not like capitalism, and either you understand or you don't. But I think most people have a very warped idea of what capitalism is.
Yes.
And they think capitalism is more what like cronyism is, of favors and government things and whatever else. Is there a country that you're like, you know what, they really abide by capitalism? Is there any country where you're like, that's pure capitalism over there?
I don't think anymore there is. Yeah. The U.S. in its earlier history, you have to then bracket certain major things. So, I mean, there was slavery. So there, for a large swath of the people, they weren't free. But for the people who were free, earlier America was much closer to a capitalist system, where it was you can rise as far as your effort and your ability and intelligence will take you. You're not going to be bailed out by the government. You're not going to be aided by the government, but it's not also going to interfere with you. You don't need 100 permits to open a business or a restaurant, right? And get people's permission. And that's what starts the cronyism. This was certainly Ayn Rand's view, and I agree with this, that the cronyism starts when government has power over businesses. Then you're incentivizing businesses to go to the government and ask for favors or ask for penalties on other companies. Like, that's what happened to Microsoft, that some of its competitors went to the Justice Department and said, well, maybe you should have an antitrust against them. And now you've got this kind of collusion of business and the government. But it starts because the government has power over business. And if you just left businesses free and defend for themselves, so you don't bail them out, and so if they're failing, then you don't have this cronyism. And I think earlier America, again, leaving aside certain glaring problems, sure, in earlier America, it had that element, that it was more, one way it would be put, is more laissez-faire, that you're on your own, and if you succeed, great, and you get what you earn. And if you fail, okay, you fail, and then you'll have to try again or work for someone who succeeded. But government's not going to be policing winners and losers. And that is, there's not really a place like that now in the world. I think government is intertwined everywhere.
Was there like a last place, or are you saying it's been that long?
Even like early 20th century America was more like this. When you look at the American government, particularly federal, but it's also at state level, the growth of it from the 20th century. So both just sort of in one of the ways they put it is percentage of GDP, like at a very macro level. But if you just look at all these different programs, they didn't always exist. Like, we didn't have a Federal Reserve. We didn't have Social Security and Medicare. We didn't have the control that government has over the health system. I mean, we saw that in the pandemic. People couldn't do anything absent getting permissions and approvals from the government. America wasn't always like that. It's been something that's been growing. And that's why I think to get something that's much closer to capitalism, you do have to go back decades and decades.
Yeah. And what, one last thing here. We didn't, touch on it, really. But what about, there are a lot of people saying, oh, socialism's the answer. That's the answer, which is, very anti, I'm very much, let's have less government, not more. Is there a fallacy in thinking socialism is bad, or is it a better option than cronyism? Right?
No, it's. I mean, cronyism is usually, I think, a step towards socialism. That because socialism is where the government has full control over the economy. I mean, the real, if you're talking real socialism, what they wanted to do and what they did in countries that implemented this was basically to abolish private property. Yeah. And cronyism, the more governments involved in business and telling businesses what they can and can't do and issuing penalties and favors, the more private property is actually disappearing. And if you push in that direction, then you're pushing towards more and more socialism, where it's just government says, well, forget, we're not even going to say like you nominally own this, but we're going to tell you everything you can and can't do with this property. We're just going to say it's our property. And that's what socialism is. And I think the basic reason it's attractive to people, and it's particularly young people, it's they think that if I'm going to be a moral idealist, if I'm going to have moral fervor, if I'm going to do what's right, then it's not about profit. This is what we were talking about earlier. It's not about profit. It's about being selfless. It's about sacrificing and sacrificing other people and taking their profits away. And that's what socialism does. So the fact that if you look at the history of socialism, it's failed everywhere, and failed is like failed miserably. It has impoverished people, and often it leads to mass death in places where it's really tried. But if you just take something like Venezuela.
Venezuela, Pol Pot.
Yeah, it just has destroyed Venezuela. But even with that history, because people can paint it as, but isn't this moral? Like, isn't this, if we're really concerned with the right thing to do, shouldn't we do this? Shouldn't we have some kind of system like this that's abolishing profit and private things, and it's making it all that we're all going to be selfless and sacrifice? And until, again, that idea is really challenged, you get these kind of swings that it's, and particularly it's again with the young who think, no, but we're going to do something good, and we're going to do something important, we're going to do something meaningful. And if you tell them, well, what's good and meaningful is not self-interest, not profit, that's, well, we all know that's evil, and those are the villains on TV, then you're pushing them in the direction of socialism.
Got it. Well said. Well said. All right. Awesome. Very nice. And do you have like social media profiles if people want to
follow you? No, I'm one of the last holdouts of not using much social media.
So they would have to fax you something, or
they can find up on the website. I use email and I do texting and email, but social media is. But also we have the Ayn Rand Institute has a YouTube channel. We have a lot of videos up there. There's some by Ayn Rand. They're very interesting. Some interviews of Ayn Rand if people want to explore more. But I have a lot of videos up there as well. So if people want to find me, that's a great place. It's Ayn Rand Institute. If you search that on YouTube, you'll find our channel.
Cool. Awesome. Very cool. Dr. Gatte, I appreciate you so very much. This was awesome. Really, really cool.
Thanks for having me on.
I'll get some feedback from our peeps and maybe there's a different topic we can introduce at a later date. But I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to Home Business Profits with Ray Higdon. And be sure to head over to rayhigdon.com/profits to download your free audio where Ray shares his 29 sources of network marketing leads. Tune in next time for more tips and strategies on how to become a top earner in your company.